This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Welcome to Breadline from the Australian Unemployed Workers Union on Community Radio 3CR.
News and views from the dole queues.
Fighting back against the poverty machine. Breadline is broadcast from the stolen unceded lands of the Wurundjeri people. The unfairness of the so-called welfare system disproportionately affects Indigenous people.
Down with mutual obligations.
Raise the rate. Fair and equal treatment for all.
Hello, my friends. Welcome to Breadline, the program of the Unemployed Workers Union. This week, we are going to continue the interview that we started last week, part one, sections one and two last week, with Pip, who is an Unemployed Workers Union member living in Armidale in so-called New South Wales. And yes, this time, this second part of the interview begins with discussing the question of how we stand up for our rights, and the dealing with work for the dole, job network parasite stroke providers, and so-called approved volunteer organisations, or hosts, making complaints and maybe finding your own alternatives to what boxes they want to put you in, or unpleasant situations where they might just make money out of you. So, without further ado, as I often say, let's begin the interview part two, Section 1, with Pip.
As members of the union, it's our job to organise and stake a claim for welfare rights because this is legitimate. Like, if we're losing our welfare rights, we need to be resisting that.
And I suppose that's an important role for the advocacy line. Yeah, it says, I'm just looking at what you wrote there, you know, arrange placement, what the work for the dole provide a managed activity is for them to ensure participants are suitable for their placements, monitor participation. But, you know, anybody who's dealt with them can tell you that they don't actually tell you what your rights are. They never make it. I mean, I only found out that I didn't have to do work for the dole through the union.
Yeah.
Not from them, right?
No, no. They're not going to tell you your rights. That's certain. So it's good to call up if you're unsure. It's good to call the union and ask to begin with if you're feeling unsure. Yeah. There's also in each state a number you can call for ask for legal advice as well. There are welfare legal centres that you can call and ask as well.
Yeah.
You can get, like, collective support from the union and advice, like, up to a point, and then you can also get legal advice. There are welfare lawyers out there.
Yeah.
Community welfare lawyers too. Another thing that, so when I mentioned I had a bad experience doing work for the dole, I experienced sexual harassment, and that's a thing that happens. I don't think that's uncommon.
How awful.
People in work for the dole placements are vulnerable. And I think, like, obviously calling the union to help you is a good idea. But should anything like that happen, or there's something wrong with the conditions in the workplace, you should complain early on And you should complain often, and you should always complain in writing.
Yep.
Yeah, you should first talk to the union, email, or get the union to email on your behalf, because it can be hard.
And I know it's difficult, you know, just from normal, not that, but just in workplace.
Oh, yeah, it's really difficult.
Is when you get home, write it down on a piece of paper, what happened, all you can remember, when happened, who said what, and if there are any witnesses, etc., right? And then send it in an email so that there's a record.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can, yeah, you can, or you can get the union to do this. It might just be easier for the union to, they can complain to the host organisation, the Workforce Australia provider, Safe Work, in whatever state you're in, mm-hmm. Department of Employment and Workplace Relations. That's already four different places that you have written evidence that something, it might be an incident, it might be a, it's as if something may happen.
That's fantastic advice, by the way. Yeah. When you mention all those places you can refer to, people can feel a lot more secure that, you know, there's a good record of it and the union's going to help support when things get tough. Because you said when people call, they're usually pretty distressed, right? And they,
yeah.
They've probably been tried to go through a few channels and got knocked back already, right?
Yeah. I wouldn't trust the job providers or the hosts organisation. And by the way, this can be in an approved volunteer work setting as well, not just work for the Dole. The job providers still have responsibility, and so does that host organisation have responsibility for your welfare.
Yep.
And there's legislation that applies, and also in the deed sets out requirements that the job providers have responsibility, ongoing responsibility, to make risk assessments, to assess that you're in an environment that's safe.
Yep.
So if you have evidence, if you have written evidence, and it may not happen, it may also help someone else down the track.
Yep.
Someone else gets injured, and then say they get represented by a welfare lawyer or something. There's evidence that other people complained about this or mentioned about this problem in the workplace.
Yep, yep. And so, because I've got your text you wrote here about, you said risk assessments and work for the Dole, and you said they can include assessments on manual handling. In other words, sometimes you're asked to lift things and you're not given proper advice about how to do it properly, and you could injure your back, etc., about machinery that's not maintained or not safe, slips and falls, chemicals, isolated work, and psychological hazards, violence, sexual harassment, and inadequate supervision. You made a nice list there for that people can keep in mind, right? I wonder if there are any other practical tips about work for the Dole outside the risk assessment thing, just for people to think about. You know, they get bullied by the job network providers into doing it, but maybe they don't have to do it, or
yeah. So there's like an activation period. And that's different whether you're in the face-to-face. If you have face-to-face appointments with your job provider, I think it's 6 months, and then they'll ask you to undertake some kind of approved activity.
Yep.
And they might want you to do work for the Dole because, I don't know why, it might be incentivized, they might get money or something.
Mm.
And you need to be a bit proactive and just be like, well, actually, I'm going to do this instead. And that's going to fulfil the same requirement in under this mutual obligations.
Have you yourself done that? Like, said to them, no, I'm not. I don't. I've actually got an alternative to what you're trying to get me to do.
I haven't been asked to do work for the dole in a while, but
Oh, good.
No, I haven't. But I know other people have definitely, or there's volunteer work at a place that they would prefer to do than say like I work for the dole placement. It still has to be approved by the job provider. They have to have the right insurances and.
Well, speaking from personal experience, you know, it does depend on whether you've got a really bad job network provider or one that's not so bad. I mean, the last one I was signed up to, I actually said, look, can I do training instead? You know, something a little bit more useful, and they agreed. And so I wasn't forced to do a work for the dole, and they saw it as an approved activity to do a Cert 3 or something like that.
That's good, yeah. And if you have a job provider who's not great, you can always change to a different one.
Or maybe just not have one at all.
Like, yeah, you can move on to the online. So what is it, whatever it is, Workforce Australia Online, which is different to having a face-to-face.
Yeah.
The other thing you can do is, so you're getting bullied by your job provider, change job providers or move to online. Also, I think people should be pushing to have phone appointments, like transport is expensive. I think it's a bit much asking people to come and do face-to-face appointments, and they should be looking at people's circumstances.
Yeah.
If that's a bit difficult.
Has Centrelink made a decision you disagree with? Most Centrelink decisions can be appealed up to 3 times. Examples of decisions you can appeal include whether you're eligible for a payment, cancellation or suspension of your payment, how much you get paid, and Centrelink debts. One of the most common Centrelink decisions appealed are Centrelink debts. Centrelink will say you owe a debt if the staff determine you've been paid more than you should have. Debts can occur for a variety of reasons. In some instances, if there's been an administrative error or if you have special circumstances, you may not have to repay that debt. The appeal process is free, but time limits can apply and will affect your entitlement to back payment. Social Security Rights Victoria is a specialist community legal centre providing Victorians free advice to help you understand your Centrelink issues and the appeal processes. You can contact Social Security Rights Victoria on 9481 0355 or online at ssrv.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
Yes, so we just played the first little part of the interview before that community service announcement, in which you heard about Centrelink legal support, which is so important. But the interview with Pip, it was very useful, I hope, where she and I discussed, but mainly she had some good advice on and practical tips as well on standing up for your rights regarding your approved volunteer organisations, work for the dole, safety, workplace safety, even though you're not being paid as a proper worker in these things and it's terrible unpaid labour, and also how to make complaints, keep a record. That's really important, you know, keep a record and a written record and get the union to help you as well if you're feeling like overwhelmed by it all. And you can do that by contacting the AUWU advocacy line. I can't stress that more. When you listen to Pip, who works on the advocacy line, it's such a helpful and important thing to have somebody like her to talk to who looks at the whole broader issues and helps you out. And the advocacy line of the of our union is open from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Mondays to Fridays, and the number for that is 0398117064. That's 0398117064. Or you can call 1-800-289-848. That's 1-800-289-848. Also, if you don't want to call directly and it works for you better, you can email us or the union at advocacy@auwu.org.au. That's advocacy@auwu.org.au, or just visit the website, which is auwu.org.au, and you'll find all the links there. Yes, so the next part of the interview, I'll keep playing the interview with Pip now, and the next part of the interview, she mentioned in that last part the deed, and this is a little bit about that.
If you want to actually speak directly to Centrelink, it's completely outsourced. I mean, you wait forever and you'll never get through to them. So clearly it's outsourcing their responsibilities.
Yeah, so they're not as culpable. Because like, you can get away with more also just legally in the private sector.
That's why I get back to this deed. It's a funny word basically for a contract.
Yeah. The thing about the deed is I was maybe a little naive before I had read it, and I haven't read that much of it because it's 600 plus pages.
Good grief.
Yeah.
I'll just mention for the audience, by the way, it's called the Workforce Australia Services Deed, which is the legal contract between the Australian government and, in inverted commas, employment services, right? Just to clarify, yeah.
So, yeah, the participants aren't a party to that contract, which is the first thing you notice when you look at it and you realise that it's the government paying for a service, the job providers to provide them. But then who is receiving the quote-unquote service? It's the participants. And the government does give them guidelines on how they're meant to treat participants. So there are, like, rules. But I was personally a little shocked at how vague the language is to begin with, and then how much discretion they give the job providers to make decisions on whether, for example, someone over 55 doing work for the dole, like maybe that's not a good idea if they have a health condition or something like this. But, you know, at the end of the day, job provider, you can make that decision.
So to clarify, you're saying that it's entirely up to the discretion of the in inverted commas, provider, who they're the ones with the contract with the government, not with us, as it should be, perhaps. Like, I mean, you've got...
A lot of it is. There are some... You will find some rights there, and then you will find some rights in law, like in the legislation, like work health and safety laws and some different things.
Yes, that was the Han Boogie, the Maiko Han Boogie with Misai Enomoto. It was beautiful. If you look up Misai Enomoto online, you'll see absolutely beautiful Japanese singer from the 1940s, post-war period. I hope you like that. It's just something a bit different from electronic music that is bombarding us in every corner and every place we go, even when you want to just buy a coffee or something. Anyway, that's irrelevant to this show.
You're listening to 3CR 855 AM, the voice of the community.
3CR, community radio, giving the voice to the community since 1976.
Yes, and on 3CR you were listening to the Breadline program of the Unemployed Workers Union, and I'm just going to play you now the last part of our interview, or the last section of the second part of the interview with Pip, and I hope it's useful for you. We're just going to finish off where she talks about some more in-depth questions about how the government's policies towards us and the rules they make for us actually impinge upon our personal relationships, which is pretty bad.
So around the time when I came up with this, like, feminist welfare militancy, I read Melinda Cooper, and she talks about how neoliberalism partners with social conservatism to transfer the responsibility from the welfare state to the, you know, individuals and families. Yep. Neoliberalism really relies on families, and she also says this thing, and it's like the inescapable. They create and enforce inescapable kinship bonds, and you see that in our welfare system, where so when my child was born, I didn't put the father on the birth certificate. If I had put them on the birth certificate, I would then be financially dependent upon the ex-partner, and then the ex-partner could have kind of some control over my life.
Yeah.
So that's one example where they really incentivize that you do that. And then I had to have a conversation with a Centrelink social worker to explain why I have to do this for my safety, because otherwise they're going to chase him up and enforce that he pay so that they don't have to.
Exactly.
So that's one example of these inescapable kinship bonds that we don't consent to, that they have to create and they have to enforce. Another example is the...
So they promote... if there are toxic relationships, they'll force them to keep going because they...
Well, they make it difficult for you to get out of them, basically. With the partner income test, partner income test is related to this, and people involved in that campaign are going to talk about this in a follow-up segment, I think. But that's an example of they're trying to make you financially dependent upon your partner.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if there's no children or it's just your partner. And they have a different legal definition for a de facto partner than what exists in family law.
Right.
Which is like having a different rule for the poor than everyone else.
Yeah.
So...
You could also add too, like young people who are old enough to work, who are on the dole, are forced into relationships of dependency on their parents when there might not be a healthy relationship with the parent.
Yeah, it's changed over time, but there have been times when the age was quite old, like 26. Wow. If your parents earned a certain amount that they were financially dependent on you. So you may have probably left home years ago and you can't receive welfare benefits because your parents are deemed to have earned enough to be able to financially support you. Therefore, the government won't pay you because they want someone else to pay you instead of. It's like alternative. So the point of this is, like, these relationships are enforced as alternatives to the politics of redistribution.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, and this has happened over time. It's gotten, like, worse. And we've been convinced to kind of go along with it a bit. They're playing on our good-naturedness to, help each other.
Well, that's right. They're exploiting it.
Yeah, yeah. They're exploiting it.
Right, that's a big thank you. That was an interview with Pip, and a big thank you to Pip. And you've been listening to the show of the Unemployed Workers Union, which is called Breadline. And coming up next is the fabulous Eritrean Voices program. And stick around for that. And I'll just leave you with a song called Moskovskaya Ulitsa by Tamara Miansarova.
Рассвет над пробужденною Москвой, тихонько ветер клены сонные качает. Сегодня снова шумный город мой, меня веселыми улыбками встречает. Он говорит мне сокровенно.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.